for coming today. So as he said, I'm Will Howard Winland. I'm from Auburn University. We'll go ahead and get started with my talk. So for a little bit of background information, as most of you probably already know, potassium is a critical nutrient to manage when it comes to cotton production due to the role that it plays in the expansion and the filling of the cotton fibers within the boll. And deficiency of potassium can cause not only a decrease in lint yield and also reductions in fiber quality, which both will, you know, cause a hit in the farmer's checkbook, and that's something that we want to prevent if possible. In recent years, you know, even dating back to sometimes in the 80s, we've seen mid to late season potassium deficiencies more and more. And this is interesting because farmers are doing soil tests as they typically would in these fields, and we're having, you know, the levels needed for cotton production are being met by the levels of potassium present in the soil, but these deficiency symptoms are still showing up. And in some of these situations, the cotton is even responding to potassium applied above what is being recommended by the soil testing lab. And so based off of that, Dr. Gertal and Dr. Weaver at Auburn did some research a couple years ago, just kind of trying to play with what they were seeing there with those responses. And you'll see in both of these graphs the yield on the y-axis and the rate of applied potassium on the x-axis. And in both of these situations, you have our soil test K levels here, and our recommendations would have been below or at where we see these red lines. But in 2013, you see here, we continue to see increase in yield above what was recommended by the soil testing lab. And again, although it's a little bit more of a slight increase, we continued to see that, cotton yield increasing above what was recommended. And so just to summarize a little bit, we're seeing deficiencies in fields that aren't testing low, and we're seeing responses when we shouldn't need additional potassium in cotton production. Because of that, some people took to foliar applications of potassium in an attempt to correct those deficiencies that we're seeing, and the results from those studies were largely inconclusive, just from location to location, with some people seeing increases in lint yield and quality, some people seeing no difference whatsoever with the application of foliar products, and then in even some situations with some products used, I guess due to the harshness of the composition, there was decrease in lint yield with some products used. And so with these results being all over the board, and with constant supplies of potassium products being put on the market by fertilizer companies, it also calls for the need for these new foliar K sources to be evaluated again and see where they might fit into a production system. So from this, we came up with two studies and two objectives of our project, with the first being to evaluate foliar potassium in combination with soil-applied potassium to see how that affects lint yield. And we came up with a second study to evaluate potassium uptake over time as it is affected by the foliar source. So you'll see here, for the rest of the study, what will be referred to as a soil and foliar K experiment, or just the foliar K experiment. So we conducted these, the soil and foliar K, at two locations in 2 years in Alabama, with one being the E.B. Smith Research Center in Shorter, and the second being at the Wiregrass Research and Extension Center in Headland, Alabama. And you'll see listed the soil series that these studies were conducted on and the background soil test levels before the study was conducted. And then for the foliar K experiment, it was conducted two locations, but at the same research station in Shorter, Alabama, at E.B. Smith, with one being at the field crop unit and one being at the plant breeding unit. And once again, you'll see the soil series and soil test information there. So for the soil and foliar K experiment, it was planted in both years in both locations with Delta Pine 1646 on 91 centimeter row spacing. We did 4 row plots that were 9 meters long, and it was set up as a split plot design, with soil K being our main plot, and within that being subdivided and split with the application of foliar potassium. It was replicated 4 times. We used 8 rates, including a 0 potassium control, and then from 67.3 kilograms per hectare up to 269 kilograms per hectare. For our foliar treatment, we used a potassium carbonate polyphosphate blended product and applied it at 4.5 kilograms per hectare at early bloom, and then made a second consecutive application 10 days later. And from the study, we collected leaf data, leaf samples at 3 timings, both before the application of foliar products, after the first application, and then again after the second application, to monitor changes in tissue K content. We also took harvest and yield data and took soil samples at the end of the season after harvest had been completed. And all the data from this study was analyzed in SAS 9.4 using the GLIMIX procedure and Tukey's HSD with an alpha of 0.05. For the foliar K experiment, it was conducted at Shorter, and this was kind of a later thought of product, so we just kind of had to go with the space that was available. And one location had Stoneville variety, and the other the same Delta Pine variety used in the previous study. These plots were a little bit smaller, but still four rows on the same row spacing, and we applied seven different treatments, including a zero potassium control and six different fertilizer products. And these were organized in a randomized complete block and replicated four times. And you'll see here in the chart, the if I can get the cursor to come up, the trade names of the products that we used, the source that the potassium in that product was derived from, and then the analysis of those products. And I will note that this study was not taken to harvest, so we did not counter for the nitrogen or sulfur in those products. And since we're strictly looking at the potassium content of the leaves, we didn't add any nitrogen or sulfur to any of the plots. So these treatments were all applied with a CO2 backpack sprayer at the same rate used in the previous study. And so prior to the application, we sampled plants from every plot and just took whole plant samples. And we came back 4, 12, 24, and 48 hours after the application of these products to take plant samples that were then dried for a minimum of 48 hours. We did not wash between harvest and drying just because the literature suggested that wasn't necessary and did not affect the content of the nutrients within the leaf. And after drying, we removed leaves and they were analyzed for tissue potassium content. And this study was also analyzed in SAS 9.4 using the GLM procedure. So to move into the results, the soil and foliar applied potassium study, we have the leaf potassium content on our y-axis and the sample timing on our x-axis. And as you could imagine, you see here in 2018 at the E.B. Smith location, after the first and second application of foliar potassium fertilizers, we had a significant increase in the tissue potassium content of the leaves and the plots receiving a foliar treatment. The same trend continued with, although numerically, a smaller increase at the first sampling interval at the wiregrass location, but it continued and even a larger difference at the second sampling time in 2018 at wiregrass. In 2019, we continued to see a similar trend at the first sampling interval at E.V. Smith, but as you can all see, we had this interesting flip in the potassium content of the plots, and we believe this is due to a number of things, with first being a poor stand that was a little bit iffy early in the season in some of the plots receiving foliar treatments that later as the season progressed with excessive rainfall that flooded the plots for a period and then periods of dryness just made the stand even worse, and we believe that might have affected the results that we're seeing here. But at Wiregrass in 2019, we continued to see a similar trend as the previous year. While although there was not a significant difference at the first sampling time, that significance came back at our second sampling of the potassium content. So into the yield data, and I will say that in 2019, we did not have yield data for the Wiregrass location due to Hurricane Michael. It came through and completely wiped out the cotton crop, and we were unable to get any harvest data from there. So I'll just proceed with E.B. Smith for 2018. And so we continue, once again, we have these two red lines denoting where our potassium recommendation would fall in. And based off the soil test level at this location, it would actually kind of be on the lower end of that range, but we continue to see a yield increase above what was recommended based off the soil test levels. And here we did see, although it's numerically a slight difference, we did see a difference in the yield, with soil and foliar plots yielding higher than plots only receiving soil applied potassium. And then to 2019 at E.B. Smith, although numerically very slight but not significant, we continued to see a little bit of an increase above what would be recommended. But then, as I mentioned, with those problems with the stand, we saw lower yields in the plots receiving foliar treatments. And then 2019 at Wiregrass, we did not see a response to added K above what was recommended, and there was no difference in yield between plots receiving soil or soil and foliar applied fertilizers. So to summarize, we saw a yield increase and due to soil test or soil applied K up to 176 kilograms per hectare, and we also saw an increase due to foliar K application. In 2019, we saw a slight but not significant response to increasing rates, but nothing related to the application of foliar potassium other than a yield decrease. And then at Wiregrass in 2019, there was no response to added K or to foliar application. And we thought this could be due to soil tests or soil K levels in the plot prior to the study. But you'll see here, just for demonstration purposes, our levels at E.B. Smith and the Wiregrass location. We haven't run for 2019 yet at Wiregrass, but just to kind of show you how it was in the last year with our study. And so on to the second experiment with the foliar K application. So you'll see here once again on the y-axis our leaf K content, and across the bottom you'll see the different products that were used. And so here at the field crop unit at our first sampling interval 4 hours after application, we saw three products perform significantly better than the control at that first sampling time, but the other three did not. But there was no difference among the actual products. And then at the 12-hour application or the 12-hour sampling interval, we did not see any differences between treatments or the treatments and the control, and that continued at both 24 hours and 48 hours afterwards. And to continue at the plant breeding unit, at no point during the sampling time of this study did we see any differences among the control and any of the products used or between any of the products. To summarize that briefly, our results varied greatly by location. We only saw significant uptake at that first 4-hour sampling interval at the field crop unit, but never saw any differences at the plant breeding unit. We only saw the significant uptake in that 4-hour interval and not after, and never saw any uptake due to potassium source at either location. And I would like to thank Cotton Incorporated and the Alabama Cotton Producers for funding this project. Thank Dr. Audrey Gamble and Dr. Beth Gertal at Auburn for helping me with these projects. And I know that was kind of a whirlwind through a lot of stuff, so now I'll take any questions if you guys have any. Yes. No, sir.
A little bit of an increase in leaf gain, but my curiosity is how that actually relates to yield, because you can look through consume and increase potash levels, and we really see it a lot if there's no fruit.
Yes, sir.
You get huge potash levels in leaves, but if there's no alternative sink like mold,
yes, sir.
Then you just keep building it up and don't do it.
Yes, sir. So I think that's in the long-term plan for these studies. I'm actually graduating in May, but I think Dr. Gertal is thinking up ways to build upon the study, because it was originally a greenhouse study just looking at potassium levels, but then we decided to take it to the field. And I think ideally the long-term plan would be to take it to yield. Yes. Can you speak up a little bit? I can't hear you. Fiber quality? So quality. So what's the question? Did we assess the fiber quality? We have not. I think that's also for future research. We're going to try to continue to improve upon. This was just kind of preliminary to see how these products would perform compared to each other. We are looking at fiber quality in the first study with the soil applied and foliar applied projects, but not we haven't looked at, because we didn't take yield. And I think when we do take yield, we will look at in the foliar only project. We don't have any of that data back yet, if I'm doing. Oh, and yeah, so the two soil-applied potassium studies were part of a larger soil-applied potassium rate study covering the whole state of Alabama, and kind of an attempt to see if we need to revamp our potassium recommendations for cotton. And so we took the two soil-applied locations for the study, but we also have one in the northern portion of the state, in the Tennessee Valley, at the Gulf Coast, and then also in central Alabama at the Pratt Floor Research Station. And these three locations, we had one plot just below the critical soil level for potassium, one just above the critical level, and then I think another that was originally thought to be above, but once we look back at our soil characteristics, also below. And none of these locations had any kind of response to added potassium above the recommended rates. Yes? Yes, the first study was irrigated, the soil and foliar project, but the second project was not.
And then did you have periods of drought stress during those times?
I would have to look back at my records, but I think there's pretty regular applications of irrigation water, but in small amounts over the course of the growing season.
Okay.